VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you are looking for an escape from the real world, you have come to the right place. Nothing but sports bets and mindless entertainment for you over the course of the next 2 hours. And what a weekend it was. We had an NBA title crown, the College World Series, a blockbuster trade, the Travelers coming down to the final three holes. And we're going to get to it all here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 158. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Our guy JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, taking a well-deserved post-NBA season timeout, getting a little vacation in, and we are very fortunate to have our guy Keith Irizarry holding it down for us while he's gone. Keith, what's going on, pal? How are you? Long time no see.
I'm good. I what's well deserved? He gets well deserved time
he
off.
Does.
I don't know.
Yeah. Oh boy, has been go through football, through NBA. I'll give it to him. I give him grief about a lot of stuff, not this one.
All right. I busted his chops a couple of weeks ago, too, when you were out, you know, gallivanting into other countries as well. So figured I gotta give him a little bit there. How are you? How's everything?
I'm great. And I wouldn't call it gallivanting. OK, world traveling. Thank you very much, Keith. You and I actually went back and forth a good bit on that. You were sharing some of your experiences where we had some overlap, which was a lot of fun. And we're going to have a lot of fun today. A couple great guests on tap to join us. Grant Mitchell coming up in about 30 minutes. Forbes contributor to the betting side of things. Dive more into the NBA. The NBA draft, of course, coming up as well this week. Josh Applebaum, VSiN contributor, going to join us in hour two. But let's kick things off the way we always do on Money Moves. Producer Brian Ortega, if you would, let's hit it with the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
Okay, Keith, top three items we're going to get into today. We mentioned the NBA finals off the top, obviously OKC winning it all last night, but a massive trade coming over the same day, which I did not expect. The Suns sending Kevin Durant over to the Houston Rockets for Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the number 10 pick in the draft on Wednesday, as well as 5 second round selections. But the NBA usually tries to space these things out, Keith. I did not expect that to come on the eve day of course, Game 7.
Yeah, I expected Durant to get traded. Definitely didn't expect it to happen yesterday. I'm sitting at a diner. I'm having some lunch with my older son's basketball team and my younger son's, a couple of his buddies as well. And suddenly phones are going, alerts, Durant is traded. And it was all basketball kids there, so it was quite the buzz.
And there was chaos, too, when it was initially announced at Fanatics Fest. Kevin Durant was on set with a reporter, Taylor Rooks, when it all came down. Everybody in the stands is just like freaking out. What's going on? What's going on? Yelling to the stage to let them know what went down. And in honors of Fanatics Fest, by the way, Crack Open a Pack is a segment we're going to do at the end of this hour. You usually hear that with regards to playing cards, and we're going to push that towards a handful of player props in the NFL, because we're already shifting the page now. College football and NFL are where we have to turn our attention here on the sports calendar.
It's also when you can start getting your value, right? Like, if you think that you are smarter than other people and you can find some, all right, I like this win total, or I like this prop for this player and other people aren't paying attention, and here's why I think that's going to happen. It's a great way to get some value pretty early on.
Yeah, going to be a lot of fun. Some interesting potential, I think, when we get to that segment on a bet that I already really, really like. So we'll get into that. And then, of course, not to bury the lead too much, what transpired last night on the court, Keith? And I said it like this on our rundown: a historic title for the OKC Thunder and a massive what if for the Indiana Pacers as their star Tyrese Halliburton goes down early in what his father very quickly told Lisa Salters on the broadcast was an Achilles. We all knew it when we looked at it. He had a wonderful start to the game. Even with him going down, the Pacers were still up one at halftime. And then things just fell apart down the stretch in the second half, the third quarter. All of those turnovers that, by the way, turned into points for OKC. And it was off and running for the Thunder to win a title, which they should have as a $7 favorite going into this thing. But if you are a Pacers fan, knowing what Tyrese Halliburton has done for you in clutch moments, especially considering that team did bring it back within 10 late, you really have to wonder what could have been if you had your star out there.
Stormy, it's such a weird and kind of eerie Monday to recap the NBA Finals, right? Because from a standpoint of winning, congratulations, Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, the word potential dynasties, those words are going to be bandied around like crazy right now. So that's all the good. But the bad is, and we were, you, me, and Brian Ortega were texting last night while this game is going on, while they keep showing the highlights of, or lowlights, I guess you could, the replay of Halliburton going down. The bad is that this poor guy gave his heart, his soul, knew the potential of a worse injury, but wanted to be out there to play. And now there's going to be medical conversations about that. And there's going to be people talking about, well, he should or should not have played. And then I'll throw this one more thing out at you. And Stormy, you know this. I live in New York. I grew up a Knicks fan. We've talked about this. I'm not the fan that throws remote controls at televisions when my team loses. With that being said, it is inbred in me. I'm not supposed to like the Indiana Pacers. And when Tyrese Halliburton does the choke side against the New York Knicks, like, I'm not supposed to like him, right? I like Tyrese Halliburton. I think there's something just so genuine about him. I enjoy him in the media. I enjoy him out there on the floor. Like, I really, really enjoy him. And then just the other human side. And again, Stormy, I know you agree because we were texting about this. Like, gutted. It just, you feel so bad for this guy who now probably is going to miss all of next year.
Yeah. And we all know, based on the replay, like, you see that happen. We've seen it so many times this postseason in the NFL and other sports. As soon as that pops, we all know it's an Achilles in that moment. He knew it too. Yeah. And gut-wrenching seeing his face and the tears, knowing that it wasn't just about the pain that he was going through, but the fact that he was in the NBA Finals and what that's going to do to his team that they worked so hard for. And he pushed himself so hard for to put himself in that spot. But this is the thing we talked about a week ago when this injury initially happened, was that we know calf injuries like this can lead to worse things. And Tyrese Halliburton knew that too. And he was willing to put himself in that position for what was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in the NBA Finals. You feel terrible for him. Final score, though, last night, 103-91. And I don't think you can take anything away, though, with that from the Thunder and what they did here. They were the team that was expected to win. They were the best team throughout the course of the entirety of the NBA regular season. In the postseason, they earned it in moments that they had to do. And the home court was a distinct advantage for this team. It was their 10th win last night by 10-plus points this postseason, the most in postseason NBA history. Their points differential at home, they were just different. Plus 259, also an NBA postseason record.
It was a fascinating NBA Finals and a fascinating run by both of these teams. Yeah. When you think about the Oklahoma City Thunder, I want to push this back at you. What is your lasting view? Like, what are you going to be thinking about when you think back about this season? Because I think that's what we all do, right? Like, when a season ends, you take a second, you take a minute, and then you go, okay, now how do we view the Thunder? So how do you view the Thunder in the historical scheme of things?
I think that statistically, and JVT and I have talked about this a lot, statistically, when you look at the numbers in efficiency, it was a historic season for them. That doesn't mean they're the greatest team of all time. What I do think Correct. About them, though, is what they did defensively throughout the course of the year was special. And that helped catapult them to put them in this position, as well as a guy like SGA, who is so young and so talented. He is the regular season MVP, the conference finals MVP, the NBA finals MVP, and he put them in a position where they needed to be. I'm curious more, not just so much reflecting on what they were, but with how much youth is on this team and their general manager, what he's been able to do. Although I will say, and I'm curious if you agree, I think it's weird that he's the first guy that talks on the podium last night after the win. But
yeah, that was,
it's weird, right?
Like, he's the architect, I guess. But yeah, that was a little odd. Yes.
So like, in that moment, I want to hear from Dagnall. I want to hear from SGA. Like, and he's a master of witchcraft and wizardry, doing what he's done with this roster. Everybody's under contract next season. They've got 6 first round picks, including 2 15 and 24 this week, right? So a lot of good things in the future. And that's kind of where I'm going here, is I know a lot of people put that word dynasty out already of what this team can be. We don't do that on this network, but I do think about what OKC can build off of this to become with how much youth they do have on the roster.
Yeah, so I'll echo a lot of what you said there, and I don't want to talk about dynasties. It's one time that they've won a championship.
Yes.
And what is it? It's like eight consecutive years or seven consecutive years that teams that have won the NBA Finals, eight, that they don't even make it out of the second round the next year. So I'm not going to say dynasty, but they are so well built. And don't forget, they had the, what, number 12 pick from a year ago, Topic, who they basically redshirted him this year. He's a 6'6" point guard, a hybrid guard that can, he's going to come back from an ACL. All 15 players on this roster are under contract. Clearly not all of them will be back, but they can be. Usually you say the word coronation for like an older player or an organization that, you know, like is rich in tradition. I felt like this season, as I remember it, is going to be a coronation of the Thunder, because I thought they were maybe the best team in the West last year and they fell and they got nipped because they were young. This year it was the coronation because J-Dub became a star. SGA is the superstar of superstars. Chet Holmgren realized what he is, and they brought in enough veterans to help out. This was awesome. I thought they deserved everything that they did, and I love that it actually took them a little bit longer to win this championship this year. A couple of series that went longer. They were battle-tested, and yes, I think they should be the favorite next year. Doesn't mean they win the whole thing.
Also doesn't mean they should be plus 240. That really threw me for a little bit of a loop when I looked at the adjusted odds coming off of this championship, plus 240 favorites for them to win the NBA title in 2025-26. But I think you put it really, really well there, especially thinking about what the Thunder were just 3 years ago, a 24-win team in 2022-23 to an NBA champion. Okay, we're just getting started here on Money Moves. Got to take our first time out of the day. When we come back, just before Game 7 of the NBA Finals, the news dropped that Kevin Durant was on the move from the Suns to the Houston Rockets. And speaking of the NBA title odds for next year, they are where on the board? We'll get into that and a whole lot more coming up here. Don't go anywhere. More Money Moves after the break.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you're betting on sports, why not give the races a try? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races each and every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. You can sign up at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use our promo code VSIN200. That'll help you claim a 20% rebate your first 60 days up to $200. Head over to firstbet.com today. Again, that's the number one, stbet.com. As we welcome you back here to Money Moves on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network, Stormy Bonantoni, Keith Irizarry with you. And the waiting game for KD's new home came to an end on Sunday early afternoon. As many a headline read, Houston just became a problem. The Suns sent the Rockets Durant for Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the number 10 pick coming up in the draft on Wednesday, as well as 5 second round selections. Shortly thereafter, because KD was at Fanatics Fest during all of this chaos when the news broke, Kay Adams asked him about it right away. Here, take a listen.
Kevin, I watched you. You didn't find out then. You knew before, right?
I had an idea, but I didn't know exactly when it was going to happen. So I'm glad we kind of did this on stage. It worked out. Fanatics Fest deserved to have that moment. You know, when people could just hang your career in a balance like that and just choose what they want to do with your career is a nerve-wracking feeling. But being able to dictate what you want to do and then being with a team that values you, and I'm looking forward to it. I just felt like, they wanted me to go. So it's like, I'm glad we both, you know, they got what they wanted and I got what I wanted. So we can move on, and good luck to them going forward. And I always remember my time there, but we on something else.
Keith, those are some pretty strong words, right? Like, they wanted me to go. If I could dictate where I wanted to go, I'm glad I'm at a place that values me.
Durant, when all is said and done, it's going to be such a weird, like, career to kind of look back at for Durant, because he is probably one of the 15 greatest, 20 greatest players that's ever played. There will be some younger people that'll put him higher, some of the older guard that'll put him lower. He's one of the greatest scorers that the NBA has ever seen. He has gone places and won. But then you have the Oklahoma City up 3-1 on the 73-win Warriors team, lose that series, jump ship and go to the Warriors the following year, win 2 championships there, then tear the Achilles, then bounce from place to place. It's going to just be such a weird career to kind of break down. And then now, all right, so now go to like today. Stormy, I look at Kevin Durant, and clearly he can still score, average over 26 points per game. He's super, super efficient. And when he's healthy, he's one of the top scorers in the NBA. He's going to be 37 years old when the season starts. He makes the Rockets better. He is a better fit for what they are doing than Jalen Green. I am not sold that Jalen Green will ever be a superstar in this NBA. I think he could be a star, but not a superstar. Kevin Durant is a superstar and has been a superstar. I don't think the Suns got enough for Durant. I'll just throw it out there to you. I don't know if you agree or not. I don't know where you sit, but I think the Suns could have gotten more.
You know, let's get into that a little bit because JVT, who we mentioned off the top, not with us this week, but he is our VSiN senior NBA betting analyst. Before he left for the vacation today, he hopped on VSiN Live Bet Sunday yesterday to give his thought process. So let's take a listen to that here real quickly as well.
I think they got hoodwinked, bamboozled, led astray, you know, the whole thing. I think it's really honestly not packaged considering some of the other reports that were out there. But I think that we have reached the point where we've gone right. You know, you turn left too many times, you start going right. It is like we've gone a little too far in one direction. Guys, Kevin Durant was a 26-6-4 player on nearly 50-40-90 shooting last season. He's played over 85% of his games the last two seasons. He's a good player. They were, I think, 3-17 in the 20 games he missed so far this year in Phoenix. And the Houston Rockets wanted him. They needed him. They coveted him in a very, very, very big fashion because their offense was abysmal. It was the second worst half-court offense among playoff teams in the regular season. And so for them to get back the Rockets' worst contract in Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, who's like fine, and the 10th overall selection where the run of, you know, legitimately good centers that they're going to desperately need are probably going to be gone, I think it's an abysmal package for them to get coming back. And I think that the Suns should be mocked for what they got back.
So that's just a deeper version of what you said, Keith, essentially there from JVT.
I like JVT saying the Suns should be mocked, and he used the word, abysmal, right?
Yeah.
So, yes, on the surface, though, how are you the Phoenix Suns and you don't get Jabari Smith Jr. back? You don't get Tari Eason back? You don't even get, like, a Reed Shepard or Cam Whitmore, guys that weren't even used by the Rockets this past year. Jalen Green is a solid player. The contract's not great, like JVT said. Dylan Brooks is Dylan Brooks. And the number 10 pick, you don't know what that ends up being. So I wonder, though, are we all, and I'm going to include JVT in this one, are we all too fascinated in the name of Kevin Durant and the stats that he has put up than GMs are? Because I know Brian Windhorst, about a week and a half ago, had said, the market is not as big for Kevin Durant as we all think. And he just, like, dropped it like that and then didn't really go further. So maybe we all are just, you know, enamored with the name Kevin Durant. Maybe the GMs aren't.
I don't know. I wonder how much of it is that he was very specific in the landing spots that he was willing to go, right? Like, you remember even all of the conversation about the Golden State Warriors and him potentially making a return to that crew. He didn't want it to happen, so that went away. Similar thing with the Minnesota Timberwolves, who the Suns probably could have gotten better trade packages from either one of those teams than they ultimately get here from the Houston Rockets. But it's kind of up to KD where he wants to go. He had a leverage play and used it. And now you look at the Houston Rockets odds movement, where they go from 18-1 to win an NBA title in 2025-26 to plus 750. Where does that rank on the odds board? The second shortest shot on the board, Keith. OKC is plus 240 to repeat. And then the Rockets and Knicks are sitting there at plus 750. Given the injuries to so many star players this postseason, we saw it to Halliburton. We saw it to Dame Lillard, Jason Tatum. Look at how this odds board shakes out. Thunder, Knicks, Rockets, Cavs, Timberwolves, Lakers, Orlando Magic.
I mean, the Magic add Desmond Bain, so that helps them there. Thunder, clearly the favorites there. I'm not sounding like a homer. The Knicks don't even have a coach right now. I don't know how you can put them where they at that. They're talented, but without even knowing who their coach is, I don't know. The Cleveland Cavaliers, the story is out on them. They fail in the playoffs. It's what they do. I don't know, man. I just want to look at this list one more time quick. Minnesota, maybe. I'm not in love with the Rockets. Pacers, no thank you. The Lakers have a lot of work to do besides, you know, two stars and Austin Reeves. Yeah. It's a weird board. Maybe that's why the Thunder should be the favorites and are the favorite. By the way, I want to bring something back to Kevin Durant. Can I read you a list and you tell me what all of these places have in common? All right. Put us both on screen quick. I want your face response to this. Okay. Alaska, Florida, Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Washington, and Wyoming.
You lost me after
if you
Alaska,
don't know,
Florida.
It's perfectly fine.
So what?
So there's 9 states that don't have state income tax. Kevin Durant, 3 of them, 3 of the teams he offered there that he wanted to go, Rockets, fair, Spurs, and the Miami Heat, no state income tax. What has Kevin Durant done so far in his career? He's won scoring titles. He's won championships. He's been, you know, one of the 2 or 3 best players in the league every single year. He's won a league MVP. He's done all that kind of stuff. You know where you're at when you're going to be 37 years old? Let me get all the money I possibly can. So you get traded to one of those 3 teams. There's no state income tax. You're getting all your money. So I think there was a little something there that Kevin Durant wanted to go to those teams.
Fair. Last 90 seconds, also over the weekend, LSU won the College World Series. The Travelers came to a close. Poor Tommy Fleetwood. Just like your heart breaks for that guy. He has the lead all day. Give it up for Keegan Bradley, though, who comes through in the clutch and wins it. Captain Keegan of the Ryder Cup. But did you have any bets on either one of those events this weekend? How'd it play out for you?
Be honest, I did not. I paid attention from afar. I did not have any bets on any golf this weekend. No.
Okay. Well, my Blake Griffin and Sam Burns top 20s got through. Not top 10. Tough loss on Griffin, finishing a tied for 14th. Burns T17. So we got 2 of the 4 bets that I placed on there. But credit VEASAN. Yeah. A lot of people had Keegan Bradley winning it all, and he pulled it out down 3 strokes with 3 holes to go. He cashes around 30-1, I believe. But Wes Reynolds had it. Kelly Bidlin, Matt Eumanns, David Behrman came on our program, and that was one of his picks going into the weekend as well. And we'll talk about this more a little bit
later.
But
I wonder if any of those guys hedged. I wonder if when Keegan looked like he had no chance, I wonder if any of them started hedging. That's what I wonder.
I don't know, but that is a strategy. Obviously, a lot of those live golf bettors take bad after the start that Scottie Scheffler had. Surprised the way that played out as well. We have to take a timeout. We can touch more on some of the ongoings from this weekend a little bit later. But when we come back, Grant Mitchell is going to join the show, contributor for Forbes in the betting section. Dive deeper a little bit more into the NBA, the way Game 7 transpired, his thoughts on KD, and the draft coming up this Wednesday. Don't go anywhere.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's a new NBA champion in the house. The OKC Thunder get it done last night in Game 7 against the Pacers. 103-91, your final score. Thunder win and cover any number that was there. The total stays under. And that theme of Game 7 unders continues as we welcome you back here to Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Keith, there is Ari, Stormy Bonantoni with you. To continue the NBA conversation, excited to bring in our good friend here, Grant Mitchell, on the Progressive Guest Line, contributor for the Forbes betting section, co-host of the Ride the Line podcast. You can also follow him on X at Mile Mitchell. Welcome in, Grant. How did you unpack the way last night unfolded in the NBA?
Yeah, so I think there's just a lot of different ways that you can go with this. And number one, it was disappointing. Let's be honest. These teams gave us a great series. The playoffs had spectacular moments. Tyrese Haliburton got off to that terrific start. And even Thunder fans will tell you they wanted to see what was going to happen. Now, does that mean that I'm disqualifying this win? Am I one of those people who's saying this doesn't count because we didn't see the Pacers at full strength? Well, I saw the Thunder for the entire season, and they were the best team during the regular season. They were the best team in the playoffs up until that Game 7. So although a Game 7 is inherently a 50-50, the benefit of the doubt was with the Thunder, who, by the way, were the largest Game 7 finals favorites in NBA betting history. So I'm cool with anybody out there who's saying it would have been nice to have seen what Halliburton had to offer, but anybody who wants to disqualify this championship, that doesn't hold up. The Thunder were the deserving title favorites, and I'm excited to see where they go from here.
So speaking of where they go from here, we know that they've got, you know, 15 players on their roster, all are under contract, so all could be back in theory. They are the odds-on favorite to win again. How do you view them going into next season?
Yeah, this team has to be looked at as differently than every team that just won a championship. Pretty much any time a team wins, they're the favorites for next year. And you start to talk with yourself and you can convince yourself, oh, they're going back to back. The Celtics were the start of the dynasty. The Giannis and the Bucks, they were going to win multiple titles. This Thunder's team is different. As you mentioned, everybody's under contract. Their MVP is 26 years old. He has back-to-back seasons scoring more than 30 points per game on better than 50% shooting as a guard. Chet Holmgren, in my opinion, was wildly disappointing in many ways. His defense was solid and his rebounding improved, but his offense was just completely missing. He had one of the lowest field goal percentages for a center in finals history. He can still get significantly better. Jalen Williams can get better. And all of these players they have around. Aaron Wiggins is young. Lou Dort is young. Alex Caruso, not young, but not past his prime. You can go up and down the roster. Everybody that's there and that played a role will be there next year, and they should be the same player, if not better. Not to mention, of course, the Thunder also have the 15th pick in the draft, so maybe they get some value there as well.
And we will get to the draft in a moment, but one last follow-up to how last night shook out. You tweeted about this as well, thinking about the injuries to Halliburton. Also this postseason, we had Damian Lillard go down. We had Jason Tatum go down. When you look at the way the Eastern Conference shakes out, three of the Eastern Conference would-be contenders are now dealing with massive injuries. How wide open could that side of things be next year?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's so wide open that the Celtics might be able to win it again, which sounds weird because Jason Tatum tore his Achilles, and they're fielding all these trade calls on Derek White and Jaylen Brown. And really, we've got no clue what that roster is going to look like. Porzingis might not be there. Drew Holiday might not be there. But with these injuries, they've got a chance. The New York Knicks have a chance, even though they might be making some move. I will say, if Joel Embiid, and this is the biggest if in the NBA right now, but if Joel Embiid is healthy, maybe the 76ers can win the East. The Orlando Magic with Desmond Bane, maybe they can win it. There's a bunch of teams out there, and of course the Cleveland Cavaliers, don't forget about them, the reigning one seed. There's a bunch of teams out there who are telling themselves they can win the conference. The difference is that's not just in-house lip service. That's a reality. There are probably six or seven teams out there who could go to bat and say, no, we're going to win the East and have real logic behind it.
But in the West, you've got Oklahoma City, and now Kevin Durant is a part of the Rockets, a team that was the two seed in the West. So breaking down that trade, Stormy and I don't think that the Suns got enough back for Durant, and that's neither here nor there. What does he make the Rockets?
What he does for the Rockets, it's a very interesting question to sort of figure out here, because I think Kevin Durant's trade value and Kevin Durant's value to a team are two completely different things. The trade value, well, you're trading for a 37-year-old who's torn his Achilles, and the teams he's been on have blown up in dramatic proportions recently, so you're not going to get a huge haul for him. But his impact on a team, and specifically this Houston Rockets team, I don't think there's a better team for him, or rather, I don't think there's a team that will improve more with the addition of Kevin Durant than the Rockets will. When you look at their numbers last year, they were 24th in half-court offensive efficiency. Jalen Green shot 42% from the field, 35% from three, not that great, despite having one of the highest usage rates in the NBA. Kevin Durant, my opinion, the most efficient and best scorer in NBA history. He was eighth in true shooting percentage among non-centers last year. Centers kind of skew the data because the whole bunch of dunks and rim running. But he's going to go there and he's going to increase the shot making of that offense by such a drastic proportion. And you look around at the rest of the roster, they're still perfectly configured. You've got elite perimeter defenders with Van Vliet and Amen Thompson. Both those guys, by the way, also can apply rim pressure, collapse the paint. Sengun can be your post tub. Jabari Smith, you're hoping he's going to develop. He has unimpressed a little bit or underperformed his potential, but he still fits very well. And Kevin Durant can be your 25-point-per-game scorer. And it all blends together very nicely. Not to mention they've got that bench where they have the reigning third pick in the draft, Cam Whitmore, Aaron Holiday, a bunch of young guys, a bunch of guys they trust. So although I'm not looking at Houston as a title favorite, I do think this was almost the perfect move for them.
And yet that is what the odds indicate, a top two pick on the board right now, according to the odds, plus 750, down from 18-1 pre-trade. The Thunder, your favorite at plus 240. Grant Mitchell of Forbes joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Okay, let's push this forward to the draft, which is set to begin on Wednesday at Barclays Center in Brooklyn. No secret, the Mavs have the top overall pick. Everybody's talking about Cooper Flagg, but there are a lot of other angles and people that people should be aware of in the draft. Any key storylines or even bets that stood out to you here early?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest situations to monitor is, I mean, Cooper Flagg is going first overall. If he doesn't, I won't even know. I need to change career fields at that point. It also looks like Dylan Harper's he was a minus 9,000 favorite to go second when I looked the other day. So he's probably there. Then you've got just a huge chasm. There's so many possibilities from 3 to 10. You know, the Ace Bailey story is one of the biggest stories right now, refusing to show up to workouts. Where is he going to fall to? Is Con Knipple, where is he going to move up to? Do you like Trey Johnson? Do you like Kasparis from Illinois? Are you going to take a risk on an Igor Demin, who's this high ceiling but low floor player? What about Derek Queen? There's a whole bunch of players, and you can see this reflected in the odds values, that are basically interchangeable. And I know you're supposed to draft the best player available, but in the event that one team doesn't and they go off of fit, I think that could start a chain reaction as well. So I would, all in all, I would say I'm kind of avoiding that middle 10 area because I think it's really just going to be kind of a crapshoot by the end of the day.
How surprised are you with how this Ace Bailey stuff is being handled right now? Because coming into this draft, it appeared that he was a lock to be either number two or number three. I think VJ Edgecombe is going to go number three now to Philadelphia, and Ace could plummet.
No, I'm with you. I've got VJ going third as well. I think Ace is still going to go number four. I don't think you can turn down a guy with that level of an ability to put the ball in the cup, which is all you're there to do at the end of the day. When you watch him play, it reminds me of two guys, Carmelo Anthony and Klay Thompson, in the sense that they don't even need to dribble to create a good shot. You know, James Harden loves the step back. Steph Curry loves coming off of screens. Iverson had the crossover. Put the ball in their hand. They don't have to be moving. They can use triple threat, pivots, fadeaways. Everything is just so fluid. And when you have a guy like that at 6'8", who can give you 20 points per game pretty early in his career, although I understand the frustrations with how he's handled this process, I don't think he'll fall terribly far.
So Ace Bailey plus 380 to be the number four overall pick. Is that worth a look at such a decent price?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, he seems to have played himself out of the top three. Not that he was ever going first. But again, if you're looking at that jumbled mix in the middle, I understand that you can get you can look at the potential of a Trey Johnson or a Kaman Maluwach or guys like that. But you know, 6'8", can score, basically be a 50-40-90 guy maybe at some point in his career. I think there's too much potential value there for a long-term perspective. So, yeah, I think that's worth putting a bet down.
Grant, great spot today. Appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Grant Mitchell, everybody. Make sure you check out the work over at Forbes, part of the betting section. Also, co-host of the Ride the Line podcast. Download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow him on X at Mile Mitchell. Okay, we're going to step aside. When we come back, call me crazy, but it is an overreaction Monday. A few things from the weekend that have me feeling like I'm taking crazy pills. We'll get into it all. Don't miss it. Stick around here as we wrap up hour one on Money Moves.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Ooh, there's there's a new sports betting market in town, and it's called Xcuta. If you haven't heard about it yet, time to check it out. And it's X-C-U-T-T-A. Xcuta is a sports Calcutta, combining the adrenaline of live auctions and strategy of sports prognostication. Create your own Xcuta auctions for you and your crew for any sporting event. I'm talking football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, Super Bowl, World Series, whatever you want. Even your own local golf tournament. You can create your own private or public auction. Create secondary markets for aftermarket buying and selling. Over 1,000 teams, players, and drivers all in the database with the ability for you to add more. Free practice auctions now running daily at 3, 6, and 9 p.m. Eastern at xcuta.com. And for a 3-month free bidding subscription, email support at xcuta. Again, that's xcuta.com. And mention VSiN, xcuta.com, the future of futures wagering.
Put on your tinfoil hats.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
The whole world gone crazy. For Call Me Crazy, But.
Okay, so for anybody who's new here, Call Me Crazy, But is a segment where we can give you some bets at odds that we think might be a little bit crazy, that they're as long as they are or as short as they are, or an opportunity to air some grievances. Stormy Bonantoni, Keith Irizarry with you. And I'm going to start by airing a grievance here, Keith, because Call Me Crazy, But do we need to see 800 replays of what we know are devastating injuries? And of course, this is in regards to what we saw last night from Tyrese Haliburton early in Game 7 of the NBA Finals. We all know it's an Achilles. We don't need to continue to see the pop. We don't need to continue to see the devastation and pain on his face. And it's not like this is a one-time occurrence. And quite frankly, this isn't an injury that is really like gross visually like some other ones. But I think back to Kevin Ware's injury, right? Or Paul George when he's on the stanchion. Tua's concussion. How many times do we need to see the freaking fencing posture? Why do TV networks do this, Keith?
I don't know, and I'm with you so much because, all right, so I show it once, fine. Then you, throughout the broadcast, you can remind us that he's injured. You can tell us what you think it's going to be, blah, 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 blah. And if people are that interested in seeing it again, go to YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, whatever it is, and you'll be able to find the injury. I don't know. I get, like, I'm not typically a squeamish person, but I think I told you this. So in 2018, I tore my pec, and like gruesome injury, like literally it sinks in and you have like a hole in your chest. And ever since that, like I can't look at people's ligaments and the tears and stuff like that. It makes me almost nauseous. I was done with it last night and they kept showing it and I kept seeing the pop. And then last night when I closed my eyes to go to sleep, guess what I saw in my head? I saw his Achilles pop and I didn't like it.
Yeah, it's just, it's one of those things. Show it once, maybe twice. I understand that you want to make the audience aware of what just happened. But after that, we don't need it 80 times. We don't need it every time we welcome back from break. You can show, you can explain and express things in a different way. Or if you must show it, give us a trigger warning of some sort, okay? All right, where's your first one?
All right, so for me, I'm going to go to baseball. And I'm going to tell you that the Phillies, who are now in first place in the NL East, will never give back that first place spot. My Mets people are not going to enjoy this, and I will be on SNY tonight, and I'm sure this will be a conversation that we will be having. But if you look at what the Phillies are doing right now, their ERA at the beginning of the year was middle of the pack. It is now sub 2.4 over the last 3 weeks when you're talking about starters and their relievers. Then for the Mets, they've lost three consecutive series. They've lost 8 of their last 9 games. The pitching has gone to not a good word that we would use, okay? And they're starting a series with the Braves tonight, who, oh, by the way, the last time these two teams played, the Braves kicked their butts. The Mets could be in trouble. They just optioned Francisco Alvarez. They, you know, Mark Vientos is still shelved. They don't really have a third baseman. They've been so up and down all across this batting lineup. I like this Mets team. I cover this Mets team. They have a bunch of great personalities. I'm rooting for this Mets team. I am worried if they don't make a move soon, like go get another arm, go get another bat. I'm worried the Phillies are going to run away with this division.
So bet the Phillies is what you're saying. Sounds to me,
yes,
especially
that's what I'm saying. Bet the Phillies.
As a Mets realist, and I agree with everything you're saying. The pitching, the bats, fourth best average in the sport right now, top 10 OPS and slugging. A lot of different things are coming together for this team. So I know it's not Why Not Wednesday, but your girl can say why not. You are an NHL person. You have covered many of an NHL draft in the past, and you cover New York sports very closely. James Higgins is someone who, coming into this year, was considered to be the guy, that he was going to be the number one overall pick this year. That narrative has shifted dramatically. Matthew Schaefer going to go number one overall to the Islanders, but he's a local guy from the Islanders area. The Islanders have the availability to potentially trade back into the top five. I've heard four or five different teams could have interest in trading up for a guy at his talent level, but I've also heard he's completely dropped out of the top three. So your options are basically the fourth and fifth pick. Call me crazy, but an 8-1 for him to go number four, either to Utah or a team that trades up, could be juicy, or he's 2-1 still to go number five overall.
So I will not call you crazy for any of this. First and foremost, James Higgins is awesome. I think he's going to be an excellent NHL player. My family, my wife actually is friends with his aunt. So we kind of know the family a little bit. totally rooting for James Higgins. I thought he was going to be the number one pick coming into the year. I agree with you, but Schaefer is going to be the answer. It looks like Miso will be number two. Number three is where we're going to get dicey. Because if it's Martone, then I think you're right, and I think number four becomes Higgins through a trade. If it ends up being Frondell at three, then I think Martone goes at four, and then I think the Predators could potentially trade out at number five. The Islanders could trade in there and draft James Higgins. So if that happens, you're making money either way with your ticket on number four or number five. I love what you're doing there.
Yeah, I like that angle. I really do. Frondell, by the way, is a minus 140 favorite to go number three overall. But an interesting conversation. Everybody's talking about the NBA draft, but don't sleep on the NHL. Some money to be made there potentially as well. What's next on your list, Keith?
All right, so the next one on my list, and this has nothing to do with betting at all, actually. It's kind of a little bit similar to what you were talking about. Like, you know, I don't want to see something. This is what I do want to see. I am so excited that Shohei Ohtani was on the mound yesterday for a second time, pitched a first inning, two strikeouts, got his first strikeout as a Dodgers pitcher, obviously, then added another one. I'm just going to throw this out there. Like, if we're going to do, like, a wild statement, I say within the next month, we're going to be seeing Shohei Ohtani pitching at a Cy Young caliber. Now, he won't win it. He's not going to pitch enough. I also think the Dodgers are going to be very, very cautious with him. He's going to be on a pitch count, innings count, all that kind of stuff. But one inning, two strikeouts against the Nationals on 18 pitches. The world is better. The baseball world is better when Shohei Ohtani is doing historic things, and that involves him being a two-way player, and I love watching Ohtani pitch. Just excited about it. Whether you like the Dodgers or not, I hope you like Shohei Ohtani.
So you're absolutely not crazy, but what that does lead me to ask you now is, if he is going deep into games and pitching well and continues hitting at the level that he is $5 cheap for him to be NL MVP? Like, if you have the bankroll, should you be laying, like, would you feel comfortable rather laying minus 500 knowing what he could be poised to do here the back half of the year?
I don't think I've ever done a minus five. I mean, you have to have a lot of money to do that.
You gotta be rich. Or if you want to throw it in one of those, like, big parlay things, like, you know how many people must have cashed, although it was a harder way to get it than
the Oilers, right?
Or OKC minus 700, right? You throw that in one of those big to win whatever parlays. Is Shohei a good leg for something like that?
Oh, yeah. In that sense, yes. Like, that would be interesting, right? Like, if you did a Shohei MVP, probably Judge AL MVP, and then throw in OKC to win next year's championship if you believe they can go back-to-back. Maybe if you wanted to mess with the Florida Panthers, have some fun to have them go, you know, back-to-back-to-back because they're odds. Yeah, you could have some fun with that. I'd be down to rock with it.
Chiefs to win a Super Bowl. You just go all the people that you expect to do random stuff. I don't like the Chiefs this year, though. Don't do that. I'm just making a point. Last one, your final 60 seconds. Call me crazy, but college baseball coaches give zero bleeps about pitch counts. For anybody who was watching the College World Series this weekend, you see LSU's ace, Cade Anderson, go 130 pitches in a complete game shutout. It was awesome to see. Although, maybe not the best thing health-wise long-term if you're continuing to do this, but I think about in Major League Baseball, Keith, where you have Gerrit Cole, who gets yanked in a 2-1 game one of the World Series. 88 pitches in. Blake Snell, 2020 World Series for the Rays, gives up two hits, has nine strikeouts and a 1-0 lead, pulled after 73 pitches. Brandon Pfaadt in 2023, Game 3, pitching a shutout, two hits, nine strikeouts, 70 pitches through 5 2/3 innings. Take him out, even though you really need this down 0-2. It's just, I wish that MLB coaches gave a little bit more runway, even though college coaches probably go a little too far sometimes.
College football coaches use their running backs like crazy, too. So
that's true.
They don't care about those pitch counts either.
Ground and pound, baby. Okay, that was a lot of fun, Keith. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, resetting for hour two of the program. Congrats once again to OKC and LSU on winning titles this weekend. MLB Talk coming up next.